was made man. And you became a man. You, God, chose to become a man. To pay the earth a small social call. I tell you, sir, you never were a man at all. Why? You had the choice where to live, where head to die, and then become a god again.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We're going to have a very interesting conversation coming up in this next hour. We're joined in studio by Eric Conway and Marin Alsop. Of course, Marin Alsop is the maestro of our great symphony orchestra here, the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. Eric Conway runs the Morgan Choir and Chorus at Morgan State University. They teamed up together to produce Bernstein's Mass, and a CD has come out recently of that concert. And we're talking to both of them about that and just about many other things as well. I want to welcome you both to the program. It's good to have you with us.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
It feels good. Between the Baltimore Symphony, which I was talking about and bringing in, and Morgan State University, our new home, it's good to have them both in the same room at the same time.
Wonderful.
This particular work, Bernstein's Mass, I know that you were very close to him. You're a protege of his, that you worked with him for a long time.
I studied with him, yeah.
With Leonard Bernstein. Amazing kind of figure in a modern symphonic, in the modern symphonic world.
Well, he really changed. I think he changed the way people thought about classical music. You know, he was willing to stand up and talk about music in a way that was demystifying. You know, from the late 1800s on, there was this sense of inaccessibility and elitism about classical music, and Bernstein just tore that away by doing young people's concerts, by talking to audiences. I mean, there was so much about him that was accessible and fascinating, and he loved popular music. I mean, he's the guy who wrote West Side Story. I mean, you can't write that piece and not be hip. And so really when he comes to writing this enormous theater piece called that he calls Mass, he's bringing all of these experiences, his love of crossing over boundaries, his grasp of all styles of music, and also I think his love for words, you know, his love for community, because you need at least, 300 people, Eric, to make that piece, at least, and you can use a lot more, too. And so it's really a culmination piece for him, I think, on many levels. And he was heartbroken when it was premiered because the critical response, the public response was phenomenal, but the critical response was pretty withholding and pretty scathing, too.
Not to chase away anybody's funders, but I mean, that in the world of symphonic music, that seems to happen. I mean, it's the kind of the world of people who are used to a certain definition of what symphonic music is supposed to be, and then comes along somebody who kind of opens the world in a new way,
and it upsets people a little bit. You think?
Yeah.
Not well received.
Eric and I don't know anything about that, do we? Right?
Got to live dangerously sometimes.
Yeah, I mean that's what Lenny was all about. You know, pushing the envelope and living on the edge, and he couldn't care less, really. I mean, but I think the criticism struck him quite deeply, and of course, the piece then had this odd dark cloud over it. And today when you hear it, I mean, it doesn't seem that wild, does it, Eric? I mean, it does and it doesn't.
Yes. Well, certainly I believe that music has changed so much in the last 30 years that there's a wider range of what is accepted now. And if it were premiered today, I'm sure we might get a little of that, but not to the extent of the 60s.
I was listening to it. I listened to the entire symphony again this morning. Before coming into the studio to meet with the two of you, and I was just immediately again struck by the power of this work, that which you were talking about, Marin, that the way it blends pop music and Broadway and rock and spiritual and symphonic music and classical chorus and using conga drums and
steel drums, electric guitars.
Electric guitars and the symphony and the chorus. It was mind-boggling, the power of it.
I know. There's so much going on. And The thing that's amazing to me is that it sounds almost like everything except the kitchen sink when we talk about it.
But it's not.
It's not. It's not. Very focused, and it's not imitative just to be imitative. It has a purpose. I mean, the piece itself is all about conflict. And so I think by bringing these different styles of music, you know, juxtaposing them so that you have something that is a quote from Beethoven next to something that's really an atonal piece, next to something that's rock and roll, next to something that's blues, and a marching band. Mm-hmm. You know, you have all these forces, and they're all about human conflict and how do we find a resolution. And so the storyline behind the piece essentially is the story of the celebrant, who's the main character, his search for some kind of, I guess, faith and understanding what faith is. He's questioned throughout. You know, he starts off with being very, very spiritual and very grounded in what he believes, and he's never questioned it. You know, he just grew up that way, and then suddenly all these people start questioning him in their own personal, very personal way, and he starts thinking for the first time in his life, you know, wow, what, maybe I'm not, maybe this isn't true, or maybe I should have doubts. And then he has a, in essence, what is a wonderful mad scene where he completely breaks down. And it's brilliantly done. The all the tunes from the piece are woven in, and all the language, it morphs from English to Latin to Hebrew to, and this is another component of this piece. It's multilingual.
That's towards the end of the symphony.
Yes. Well, it's sort of like two-thirds of the way through.
Right.
And, of course, then the whole piece becomes about this unbelievable conflict and how does he resolve it.
Just go on without me, stop waiting. What is it about me that you've been respecting? And what have you all been expecting to see? Take a look, there is nothing but me. Under this, there is nothing you miss. Put it on, and you see any one of you can be any one of me. What?
It's great, isn't it, Eric? I mean, it's an emotional experience.
Certainly. My choir certainly enjoyed the piece. My choir is a very spiritual group. And they took to this immediately.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Because I know that you do a lot of spiritually based work in the choir.
Yes.
At Morgan, and how they took to this piece by Bernstein.
Well, the irony is that our role was the church choir, very proper and singing in Latin right. Most of the piece. However, there was one scene as we crescendo to the end where we actually, the choir gets to break out in song, and there's actually a scene where we're actually dancing on stage and. We were actually able to jump out of our robes, if you will, and find ourselves as well, musically and spiritually.
And it allows, I mean, that's the great thing about this piece, too. It allows for the individual to come through. Mm. You know, it's all about collective experience and then how you maintain your individuality in the context of a congregation or a collective. Mm. And it was interesting to watch the kids from Morgan State because, you know, at first, I think it was an exact reflection of what Bernstein was thinking. At first, it's a tentative, well, should we really be doing this? You know, are we allowed to express ourselves? And by the concert, man, yes. They were grooving and dancing and doing improv. It was great.
Yeah. And one great thing was Jubilant Sykes, the celebrant, who, of course, has an incredible voice.
Right.
The soloist has
incredible
a great
voice. Amazing.
But he's a very honest performer, and I think that was very important to this piece, and even for any music to be very honest as you perform, but even more important when the performer is a priest, to be honest, and to hear the honesty in his sound and his presence and to feel that in a big hall was incredible.
I want to, in this particular piece, how do you pull these things together? I mean, as the conductor, as someone who is the kind of artistic director of this, I mean, it's so many pieces to kind of.
Yeah.
It's not. I mean, I was telling before we went in here how much I enjoyed this season's Mahler's Ninth that you conducted.
Thank you. Yeah.
It was just a brilliant performance, I thought, by our symphony with you at the head of it, and that But this is different because it's not just...
No, there's a lot more, more moving parts,
right,
so to speak.
Right.
But I think from my perspective, the important thing to get across to all of my 200, 300 performers is that it's all about the music. I mean, you know, if everybody's motivated from, as Eric said, you know, you have to be authentic and not try to fake it. It has to come from the right place. But then also, that I think the conductor's role with something this massive, if you pardon the pun, is to really be the person everyone leans on. You know, I don't want anyone to feel like, oh, I messed up. If they feel, oh, the conductor messed up, then I think my job is done properly. You know, it's everybody needs to lean on me and trust. It's like having all these hundreds of people sort of leaning on you, and you lean back and take charge and let them trust you. And if you're in it for the right reasons, I think it works beautifully. But if everybody's off doing their own thing, I mean, forget it. It's a total chaos.
Right. It could easily fall into that.
Could easily, but luckily we steered just on the edge of that.
Well, that's what the creative impulse is always kind of steer on the edge of that, right?
Of course.
So I one of the things about this piece as well to me is as a kid who grew up with Leonard Bernstein on television and his symphonies and kind of reaching out to new worlds of audiences. I'm thinking about, and this is my kind of social thinking for a minute about this piece, that when I listened to it again, and several times before leading up to this program, that in reading the words and listening to the performance, that it was very much, on the hand, embedded in the turbulence of the 60s, and the questioning of our world. But what's amazing is how it fits into the world right now. It's almost timeless in that sense because Bernstein was a man who was so deeply involved in social justice issues and raising money back in the 60s. I remember for the Black Panthers in his apartment and all the things he did and very involved in civil rights stuff and a real progressive thinker as well as a great artist. And it's just you can feel that all the way through this piece.
Oh, absolutely.
And what it says about today's world.
Well, I mean, you know, I think that's the message of great art is that it transcends really the specifics of when it was written. I mean, you know, I just think about the questioning that we need to do today and the terrible injustices just of the, you think of the subprime scandal.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you know, you just, how can we keep perpetuating these kind of injustices on each other as human beings? You know, this is, I mean, it was the same thing about the Vietnam War or our continuing conflict, you know, in the Middle East. I think that these, in some ways, the piece is more topical now because it's not as specific. So each of us can mm-hmm. Almost hear it for our own personal injustices, which I'm sure we all feel and we all harbor.
How about for you and this, how that affect your work with the students at Morgan producing this piece? Is that a piece of the conversation that you all thought about as you worked on this?
Well, to be honest, of course, musically we're trying to get everything exactly right.
Right,
But of course. We grew individually with the piece. And I got to share with you that even after the performances were over, we, you know, rather than just have done one shot deal and you're done, we sang excerpts of this piece throughout our season last year, and was well received. And even I think that this will be a permanently etched in their memories for a lifetime. But to answer your question, I certainly saw a growth musically and spiritually of the choir through this piece.
You know, I should mention that it's a very interesting technique that Bernstein uses because the congregation, the seated choir, which is the role that Morgan State plays, mm-hmm. Is the most challenging music of the whole piece, which is quite interesting because they sing a lot of what I would call atonal music. I don't say that to put people off at all, but it's music that is, there's something dispassionate, slightly removed about it. And I think that's part of Bernstein's message, is that it's a conflict not just it's a personal conflict for him between tonal music and atonality, mm-hmm. you know, because in the 70s, this is where music, classical music, is sort of coming apart at the seams and running off the rails. So he's trying to express, you know, his own internal conflicts as well, which play out in the difficulty of the music, which for the congregational choir is very, very challenging. And they did a beautiful job, I have to say. It's not just the pitches and the harmonies, but rhythmically, it's very tricky. So it's quite unusual to have a piece where the seated choir has the most challenging part, you know, as opposed to all the soloists running around.
And I must say, it was to Mirren's credit, we had some problems at the rehearsal trying to just connect it just right. But when Mirren joined us for the first rehearsal, it all came together magically.
Oh, you're very kind. I don't think it was quite magical, but it eventually came together. So,
but it was, that was a part of the magic of this piece, I think, is that it. When you said the symphonic world in some ways was coming apart at the seams in the early 70s, that there were these new kind of cutting-edge composers that nobody was listening to, or not enough people listening to.
Well, a few people were listening to.
A few were listening to, but they were not being heard.
Right.
And that's part also what you're bringing to the symphony now, I think, in your tenure here, is mixing the great old pieces with new work. But that's what Bernstein did in this piece. I mean, he was... That quality, he could kind of take the core of the classic sound of symphonic music, bringing in this kind of new wave of sound along with all these other kind of musical pieces.
I think there's another dimension to this too, because Bernstein was always criticized for being too hip and being too populist. And,
right.
you know, I mean, he loved, one night I asked him, I was at his place, and I said, you know, this piece reminds me of this Beatles song. And he proceeded, it was about midnight then, he proceeded to sit down at the piano and play every single Beatles song. He knew every word. He played it really about 3:30 in the morning. I was like, you know, my eyes were... But, how many sort of long-hair classical conductors could sit down and play every single Beatles tune? He loved, you know, he loved popular music. And I think he was... criticized by the, you know, intelligentsia and and the establishment for being so eclectic in his tastes. And, I mean, again, as Eric said, it was a different, you know, 30, 40 years ago. I mean, that was a real no-no. And so he's bringing together this love he has for popular idiom, but also he's nervous because his serious music doesn't even fit. It's not inaccessible. It's got melody. It's got harmony. It's tonal music. So he's dealing with that conflict as well. You know, I mean, it's a very personal piece and a very universal piece at the same time.
I'm also with this particular work, Bernstein. I mean, I kind of brought in a lot of people to help work on this. I mean, what I've been reading about it is that he, at the end, was like in this sort of a panic to get it done.
Of course.
And he brought other people in. And did Paul Simon actually wrote a piece, or a piece of his work is that right?
He wrote, the story I heard was something about the elevator at the Dakota where Bernstein lived, that Paul Simon, I don't know if he had an apartment there too, or somehow he got the lyrics. Maybe this is, you know, like folklore from the kids. I don't know. But he did, put a little insert of Paul Simon's words, half the people are drowned and the other half are swimming in the wrong direction.
Half of the people are stoned and the other half are waiting for the next election. Half the people are drowned and the other half are swimming in the wrong direction. They call it wrong.
I think that's a tribute to Leonard Bernstein, to who he was, when he's able to say, oh, I think that's hip, I'm going to use that and I'll give you credit. And I want to incorporate that in. it was like a Broadway musical, though. Maybe your mm-hmm. listeners don't know why the piece was written. I mean, this is kind of a fascinating story because when the Kennedy Center was being built, Jackie Kennedy Onassis asked Leonard Bernstein to serve on some committee, and I guess it didn't go so well. He's not good on committees. And so she said, well, why don't you write a piece instead for the opening? And obviously it was going to be called the John F. Kennedy Center. And so Bernstein's thinking, well, what can I write to commemorate this president, whom I know he revered? And he thinks, what's distinguishing about John F. Kennedy? And the first thing that comes to mind is the fact that he was our only Catholic president. So the idea of mass, it immediately conjures up, obviously, this the high road of Catholicism, but he doesn't. It's not a mass at all.
Right.
He uses the structure of the mass, you know, with the Kyrie and the, you know, all the different sections, the sacrament, the Sanctus, and he hangs this whole new art form on it. So it's a brilliant, brilliant idea, and it pays tribute to Kennedy, but it also questions this whole issue of religion and spirituality, which was big, big thing for Leonard Bernstein his whole life.
I mean, go ahead, Eric.
I was going to say, again, imagine the idea of having Hebrew in a mass.
Right. That's what I was about to ask.
And
yeah,
the very, I don't know whether Marin found this to be true, but the music that was in Hebrew was also lyric and lush.
Mm-hmm.
And obvious his love for his Hebrew Jewish roots.
Right. And of course, I guess, again, it's this bigger message that Bernstein was trying to share, that our similarities far outweigh our differences. I mean, this is what he was all about, that we are connected by goodness through and through as human beings. And if we could only somehow get in touch with that and stop with the wars and stop with the greed and all these things, that we could have a unity that really would be spiritual. And that's what his whole life was about, really.
I mean, go ahead.
And the irony is, of course, we have world wars over religion. However, but it should be religion that unites us.
Right.
And what a better piece than mass to do that.
And that's what about this piece that hit me, that one of the things what you were both talking about this moment is that there was the Hebrew text, Latin, English, the kind of merging in some ways those other spiritual paths, the street courses and other courses challenging the kind of dominant view, and the celebrant responding and wrestling with that. It's like wrestling with all these deeply spiritual ideas and where the world should go. I mean, besides a piece of music, there was some profound kind of thinking going on.
Oh yeah, it's
inside of all this.
It's a very self. It's a self examination, really, in a way. And Bernstein's daughter, Jamie, we were doing an interview together about the piece, and she said as she watched him writing this piece, you know, in the original production, Alan Titus, who played the celebrant in the 1971 production, they had him sort of put on more and more clothing, you know, more of the traditional garb that a priest will wear as, you know, the services get more and more ornate. And she said that she realized at that moment that maybe her father was talking about himself, that the pressures of being a conductor or being a composer or being this sort of, you know, it's sort of an interesting idea that maybe it's also on another level of a very personal autobiography for Bernstein. And I think these questions that you're highlighting right now are the questions that he constantly asked himself, you know, and why are we doing this? What makes us behave this way? And I think those are important and timeless questions, and they need to be continually asked.
So this collaboration between these two incredible musical organizations here that went into making this, anything else afoot between our symphony?
Oh, we got a lot planned, don't we, Eric?
Oh, yes, yes. The project in May with Kathleen Battle.
Really?
Yes.
Coming to town to play with, to sing with us.
She's singing and doing spirituals, and it's all about the Underground Railroad experience, and that's going to be spectacular.
Yes.
Don't you think, Eric?
Oh, we're looking forward to it. We've worked with Kathleen Battle once before, maybe about 10 years ago. And
you know, we've collaborated for years on, even before I came to Baltimore, on a piece called Too Hot to Handle,
mm-hmm.
Gospel Messiah. This was way back in the days when Dr. Carter was
yes.
still here. And Morgan State used to come up to New York and do the piece with me. And we performed it last year. And even though Morgan State, the City College Choir is going to join us as the chorus, but we're going to have soloists this year from Morgan
yes.
State, and I know we'll come back to this piece. We just wanted to expand out to include even younger people, but we have a lot of projects in the works together, and I think we're looking at a long and fruitful collaboration. Don't
yes.
you think, Eric? It feels right.
Oh, yes, yes. And
sounds right, too.
And for music students to work with the premier musical organization in the city is just an incredible opportunity for them.
That's great, and I ran into an alumni of Morgan State at the Safeway the other day, and we had a really great and very moving conversation in the produce department of the supermarket.
Big conversations
nice.
Happen in the
you
supermarket.
You know, it was really nice, and we should share the great news about the CD. Besides, I
yes,
think it's an important. It's a double CD. It went right away to it's number 6 on the Billboard classical charts, which
is it really
highly unusual already.
Yes,
and it's the best-selling initial release that the record company has ever had.
Really?
So
that's great.
For Naxos, that's
for
quite
Naxos,
a statement. Yes.
It's quite a statement because
yes.
they're a big company. So we're really thrilled, and come on, everybody, buy one so it can go up to number 1. That's the
yes.
idea, right?
We have to encourage that.
Yes.
I mean, Eric, go ahead. Do you want to say something?
Yeah.
I just think, and it's just an amazing piece. It's just, I think that people who've not heard it before, it's just so moving, so powerful, and it just emotionally and musically takes you all over the place.
Yeah.
But in a way that is tied together, it's just such power to it.
And to include the Peabody's Children's Chorus.
Yeah.
Yes.
As well as I was so pleased to also find that the Morgan State University Band was able to participate in this as well.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, we got everybody. And then we have, of course, all those talented, the cast of the street singers.
People, yeah.
They were great. And then we had, and the beautiful boy soprano. I mean, it's sort of, you know, you forget how many people really it takes. But again, this was Bernstein's big thing, that it's, you know, it really does take a village. It takes
yeah.
a lot of people to create a great experience that is alive and vital, and I think that's what we have here in Mass.
And I share with both of you that I think that Leonard Bernstein was one of the most seminal, important figures in our world of music and culture in America.
Without a doubt.
And that you brought him back to life in his work, in this wonderful work, Bernstein Mass, 2-CD set, and it's just amazing. Thank you both so much for being here.
Pleasure. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for producing this.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Blessed is the man who loves the Lord. Blessed is the man who praises him. Louder, 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 and walks in his ways. I will lift up my eyes to the hills from whence comes my help. I will lift up my voice to the Lord, singing louder, louder. For the Lord is my shade, is the shade upon my right hand. And the sun shall not smite me by day, nor the moon by night. Blessed is the man who loves the Lord. Laude, 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 and walks in his way. All of my days.